The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Woolley Awards. This is the 8th annual awards. I'm sure you've all been keeping count with me on this very special occasion. Conan's worn a shirt. Fair play to you, Conan. Like, I mean, all you need is a Dickie Bow. It's a white shirt.
I remember last year you were pretending like we were all wearing tuxes. But no, this year we're on YouTube.
We're on Poxy YouTube.
You're wearing your Adidas tracks that everyone's going to see it.
Yeah, we might not have been wearing tuxes last year when we said. Connor's here as well. Connor's wearing a polo shirt. So you have a collar on as well.
I wanted a tuxedo t-shirt, but I couldn't find it in my wardrobe this morning, I'm afraid.
You're a very special guest here, Connor.
Thank
because you.
You
get the credit of starting the Woolley Awards. So this was back when you're just grabbing a couple of tweets back in the day.
A long time ago.
So I think I sent out a few tweets about the players I like and players I didn't like, and you christened them the Woolley Awards. So there you go. So 8 annual awards later, and here I am.
When I spot the potential for a good idea, Woody, I follow up on it. Just to say I'm sorry I'm late. The crowds outside are absolutely
no
ridiculous.
It is a bit, it gets a bit mental.
Autograph hunters and stuff, and
to be honest, we moved it from in around All Stars time this year because there are a couple of kind of poor imitations of the Woolley Awards floating around that week. So I want to just separate it out. Let's get an end of year award. Plus next year, hopefully we'll have the Woolley Awards at a live venue. Now, hopefully those
we'll have the tuxes on then.
We'll have to have the tuxes on then, because that's the dream for me. That's the dream for me, is to move the Woolley Awards into an actual live event where you have a red carpet. I know we have a red carpet here today, but like, I mean, we didn't record that. You know,
some of these categories, Woolley, though, I don't think people are going to show up to win their awards.
Shut up. We'll change them. We'll doctor them. Well, we'll have to give our All-Stars. We're not giving that because we've given that now. The All-Stars have been done. These are end of year awards. There's no All-Stars been given out. We've got 9 awards. So Goal of the Year, Controversy of the Year, Prefer to Go Walk the Dog Game of the Year. That's for Joe Brawley and Colin O'Rourke, who often refer to the fact that they took the dog out for a walk. Fans Leaving at Half Time Performance of the Year, or Leaving Before the End of the Game. So-Called Weaker County Famous Win of the Year. GAA PR Fuck-Up of the Year. Individual Performance of the Year. Structure Fuck-Up of the Year. And Woolley Parkinson's Ego Award for dropping off the panel because you're not getting a game. So there you are. There's the 9 individual awards. So we're going to start off here with the Goal of the Year. So the nominations in football is David Clifford. That's a very obvious one against Monaghan. JJ Hutchinson with an absolute screamer for Waterford against Wexford in the qualifiers. That was a famous win for Waterford that we might hear a bit about later on. We have Daniel Flynn versus Monaghan, a real solo effort and a finish at the top corner. And we have the Cara Finn goal in the All-Ireland Club final, which obviously Conan loves now because we'll never see their likes again.
Well, not until the league.
So the winner here, I think we're going to go for, well, I tell you what, we'll do hurling as well and we'll announce the two winners at the same time. So hurling, we have Conor Lehan, goal against Limerick, absolute screamer into the roof of the net, did all the work himself. Johnny Glynn versus Clare, caught the ball, held off his man with one hand and whacked it in tennis style with just with his left hand. And then we have Shane O'Donnell versus Galway, which is an absolutely sensational goal. When he got the ball, there was absolutely no goal on. Two Galway lads, Dahi Burke in around the mix, and what he did was just absolutely sensational. So listen, lads, I'll throw the football over to you two and maybe I'll talk about the hurling one. Is that fair enough?
I think I'll
sounds good to me.
What do you think, football?
I mean, straight away, like, Daniel Flynn and David Clifford jumps out to me. Daniel Flynn's one was incredible. What I like most about that was that Drew Wiley is almost touch tight to him on the 45, but then when Flynn decides to go, poof, just the gap opens up and Wiley's sort of struggling to get after him, like, and there's just the way he takes that little dummy solo and just goes past Darren Hughes, like, he's not even there. Darren Hughes is there in the Colin Kavanagh role, doing it well all year to stop goals, and he just waltzes past him and just nonchalantly sort of
such
pokes
a nonchalant finish.
Such
into the top corner, yeah.
But this fella's done this before. I don't know. I was watching Tahiji Cahir there at the weekend and they were doing all goals of the year. And they showed Daniel Flynn had 3 nominations. One was against Mayo in the league where he caught the ball on the end line and was it in the league, right?
It was, yeah, yeah.
And comes right around the goals, two or three lads kind of feigning to shoot, gets around to the very far side of goals and whacks it back into the other corner. Then against Dublin, do you remember his goal against Dublin? An impossible angle and it sticks in the stanchion. Lad's a beyond belief, some of the goals this fella scores.
It's crazy, and then he just walks away like he hasn't done anything special. Like, you know?
I think next year we'll be calling it the Daniel Flynn Award for Goal of the Year.
Yeah, it looks like
is that fair enough? Okay, right, well, you've given me your thoughts on that. Hurling, to me, I don't see any goal past Shane O'Donnell's, because a bit like Daniel Flynn, when he gets the ball, you're not thinking goal, and all the great goal scorers are thinking goal. That's just the way it is, you know? And, like, I mean, he rides a tackle, he goes around the long way and then comes in, drops the ball on the ground, pretending to shoot, and then whacks it along the ground. Like, I mean, there are so many different scenes to this play.
That dummy was the icing on the cake at the end. But like, he's not just beating any men, he's beaten, like, Shane O'Donnell isn't the biggest like intercounty hurler out there. Galway have most of the biggest intercounty hurlers out there. So I think he runs into Dahi Burke. Dahi Burke tries, he pirouettes into him first.
Yeah.
Dahi Burke nearly tries to wrap him up, evades Dahi Burke. I think he beats another defender, and then it's David Burke that comes across to try and get him, drops it. Just
that's when he drops it.
Simple finish. Oh, it was fantastic.
But under that pressure, after taking on those two lads, to see someone coming in on your blind side and to just drop the ball.
Yeah.
Like, that's Jamie Clark versus Tip. Yeah. It's better than Jamie Clark versus Tip. He failed to shoot. It's hard. Like, obviously, it's harder, some of these things in hurling. Conan won't like to hear that. He's a total football snob. But no, listen, I don't think many players in the game can score goals like that outside of, you know, the extremely talented. Right. Let's get to the winners, lads. So the winner, a goal we haven't mentioned at all, is David Clifford versus Monaghan. Like, I mean, you cannot get a better goal than this. Now, this is clutch. This is your first year. This is when he got the ball. Like, I mean, he's on, okay, I think both feet are the same, but I think left would be his stronger side. But like, I mean, to whack it in that power, the picture that was taken from behind that goal and doing the rounds on Twitter, what he had to aim at there, lads, it's just a phenomenon. It's a phenomenal goal to generate that much power, that many bodies, and get that ball in, and obviously clutch part of the game. Obviously JJ Hutchinson deserves a shout out as well. That was a screamer from the 21. I think the winner in hurling is Shane O'Donnell. So there you go. Give it up for David Clifford and Shane O'Donnell. All right, second award is Controversy of the Year. There was a lot of these. I actually had to narrow these down and take controversies out, because there seemed to be a lot during the year. The first one we're going to start off with is the OMA pitch being narrowed for Dublin's visit in the Super 8. Now, why this was a controversy is because Mickey Hart denied any knowledge of this. So Mickey Hart said after the game, "The narrowing of the pitch is nothing to do with me at all. That was a request from Sky that they would like more clearance at the side for all of their technology." 2 days later, Sky released a statement that says, "This is incorrect. Sky Sports did not ask for the pitch to be narrowed, nor would it ever make such a request." So there you go, lads. I don't know, like, we've talked about this during the year. Mickey's, unless Mickey's given a bum steer by the OMA groundspeople, is that who would be giving him false information?
It was a weird one. Like, they say the detail, or the sort of key to a good lie is the detail, and he really went specific with it. But this is one occasion where he should have just said, "It's nothing to do with me, I don't know what happened."
Yeah.
Rather than saying it was them, and then people go, "Okay, we'll ask guys, see what they think."
We're all in agreement the pitch was narrowed. That was obvious.
Yeah.
There was a lot of room on the side of the pitch. No one's even, I don't think anyone even criticised Tyrone. You're entitled to do it.
Is there any shame in that?
No, there's no shame in it. Like, it was completely understandable. So why Mickey Hart would make up such an elaborate lie that he was bound to get caught on. Such a Christian man as well.
Remember Stephen McDonald was on, and he thought they only narrowed one side of the pitch. we were trying to explain to him why that wouldn't work.
But that was one of the all time classics. Stephen says, "Well, they only brought it in one side." I said, "But Shirenda would have to move the goals," and then just silence.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that was one of the moments of the year, actually. We should have had that. Yeah, it's hard to think of everything. Right,
there's fuck up of the year still to come, isn't it?
So Stephen Wallace, he was another controversy of the year. So this was versus the county board. So after after Offaly were beaten by Wicklow in Portlaoise after extra time in one of the games of the year, exciting games of the year, he got his P45 on the Wednesday. So, like, I mean, this was a big controversy at the time, because he was obviously serving a suspension for 8 weeks over an incident down in a club game. He came on the show. He was very annoyed at the county board, saying he had the backing of the players. Players released a statement. All these different kind of scenarios. And he ended up just still getting sacked. So, like, I mean, he did the rounds on the media as well, and I had a little bit of sympathy for him, but I also saw the other side of the argument as well.
Yeah, with all due respect to Stephen Wallace, I think I remember at the time, and I was kind of, yeah, it's a pity that it's got as messy as it has, but I couldn't really blame the Offaly County Board at the same time. But just on the back of that, like, fair play to, like, Paul Rose came in and did an amazing job in the back of it. And, like, Offaly ended up having a good year, so I suppose that could have threatened to put a whole stain on their entire year, but it actually turned out okay in the end.
Yeah, they stayed up in Division 3, which they were seen as a success, and there was issues with one or two players. There was some rumblings from the squad that everybody wasn't happy, and then they lost to Wicklow, and then he was serving suspension. And I have never in my life seen the Offaly County Board side of anything, because everything you hear from them is just a nightmare. Yeah. So I think the way they did it with Stephen, when he had the backing of the players, I'd have let him see out the year at that stage. Paul Rouse ends up getting the job then. He did all right, they beat Antrim, and then put in a good performance against somebody else.
Clare.
Against Clare at home, yeah. And then Paul obviously couldn't commit to that. So, like, I mean, Offaly, if there's controversy of the year, Offaly could probably have a nomination every single year. Kevin McStay throwing the ball at the linesman. Half time in the Super 8s. Michael Murphy caught a ball. Michael Murphy was running through on goals. I didn't see this incident. I'm not sure if you can remember this. I was driving to another Super 8 game at the time. I think it was up in Omagh. It was the one RTE headed off to do the horse race. Yeah. And that's why I probably missed this. I missed it.
That's right.
Exactly. I'm putting it all together now. I missed this incident even on the radio.
Luckily, we're on controversy of the year.
So he gave a Roscommon player a handoff, as in put his forearm into his face and continued on and kicked a point. At an important part of the game, Kevin McStay was livid. He says the linesman was facing it, but I come across this a lot, this officiating over the last 2 years, and some of these linesmen are incredibly precious and they like to play the hard man when they're on, and it's not very pleasant when you're trying to manage a team. So a pretty big controversy. He ends up throwing the ball. In fairness to Kevin McStay, his aim wouldn't be that good, that he threw it from a decent distance and ended up hitting him on the head. Like, you know, brilliant stuff all round.
Yeah, like, he sort of felt, don't really feel for people in those situations, but he did for him, and they needed to win. They just got hammered by Tyrone. This was the game at home against Donegal, who had just lost, so they needed to win that one. And when you think officials sort of interrupting, you can sort of just lose the plot a little bit.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think Gordon Kelly, if you stuck that into controversy of the year, him getting suspended for 3 months for spraying water in the direction, and, like, he was on the show and, you know, explained exactly what happened. Like, it's beyond belief. He just sprayed it in front of him.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, even if it is water, like, you see the Dingle official coming in and whacking a lad and getting... Yeah, how did he get 1 game?
8 weeks, I want to say.
It was only
one game. Yeah,
it was actually the county final, and then maybe a league game or two. Gordon Kelly missed the entire league. Now, in fairness, he got back before the championship. Then finally, nomination is the Mayo Ladies controversy. Like, I mean, and this was, like, there was so many different layers to this. There was accusation. There was Peter Leahy coming on the show. Then there was further vague accusations. Then there was Cora Staunton's book, and which kind of continued it on. There was tears in a press conference, which only a selection of the media were asked to. A lot of cloak and dagger stuff that, like, I'd say, you know which side I'm on from talking on the show enough. The clincher for me was always been, and we were saying on the show about this, and we're always like, geez, what's happening there? How can we cover this? Like, I mean, because usually I'm on the player side. Then when the remaining players released their statement completely 100% back in the management, I went, there's something not right here. And then you start trying to find out about it, because this is weird. There's no way the majority of the panel can like the manager, a small percentage of players, the majority of which from one club, don't. And it turned out that, you know, it wasn't, there was a lot to this story.
Yeah. It's just, I just think the whole thing is incredibly sad. Like, I don't need to go over the details. Again, you've kind of given us the run through of it there, but it's just left a bad taste in the mouth, and I think the legacy of it is going to go on for a while. I mean, I was just reading there lately that there's 49 players in the Mayo Ladies squad at the moment, and none of them are from Carnacon, and none of the players that were involved in the departing squad last year are going to be involved this year. Like, 49 players and no Carnacon players. That's considering how dominant Carnacon have been at Mayo level in the last few years, and there's friendships that are going to be torn out of the back of this. And I just think it could take Mayo Ladies football years to recover, and it's very sad because they've given us a lot of good times in the last few years.
Yeah, by all accounts there was text doing the rounds, which actually backed up Peter Leahy's statement that there was some kind of corralling of players to kind of leave before that Cavan game. And I was desperate to get these texts to kind of vindicate that side of the argument, but obviously there's relationships there and there's trust between players that if they became public, it would turn absolutely toxic. So
yeah, and that was another layer. The Mayo Ladies Board came out. Just remember, it was opposite lunchtime the morning after that press conference was broadcast on TV. Then, like a couple of hours later, Mayo Ladies Board, 1,300 word statement, and they weren't. Sort of, you
they
know,
didn't hold back.
No, they didn't at all. And that was one of the things they mentioned about, was it intimidation or pressure anyway for all their players in the panel to join them and leave it and stuff?
Yeah,
and
they said that, yeah.
Made it clear that it was a management issue, like, as we were always talking about as well all year.
Exactly. Right, well, the winner of this, like, I think it's pretty obvious the winner of this is the Mayo Ladies controversy. Like, I mean, so Mayo wins something, Connor, which is, you know, you can be pretty happy about. But, like, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt, like, considering how long this went on. It almost went to the point where I was just like, oh Jesus, like, I mean, Cora released her book at that stage, and by then it was almost like, oh God, is this still going on? We kind of
still not
show.
Really over,
isn't that still?
Well, that, like, Peter Leahy was had to confirm this week that there's no Carna Cum players in the panel, so
he's still being
still making news.
Okay, so there you go, congratulations to the Mayo Ladies panel. I'm sure they'll accept this award very gleefully. They're the winners of Controversy of the Year. Award number three is the Joe Brawley and Colm O'Rourke inspired award for You'd Prefer to Go Walk the Dog Game of the Year. All right. So, like, I mean, first one up in this one has to be, like, a very famous day for Fermanagh. But, you know, it wasn't a game for the traditionalists or for anything like that. It was a very, very dour game. It ended up Monaghan 10 points, Fermanagh 1-8. Fermanagh got a goal in the last kick of the game to win it. They were 5-1 up at after 28 minutes, after starting the game really well, and then, like, scored 3 points for the remainder of the 50 minutes of the game, whatever it is, and then got a goal just to smash and grab. It was a dour game, lads. It was Ulster football at probably its worst, but it threw up a big surprise. So which do you want?
Ulster football at its best as well, yeah. Like, I'm surprised that's in there, because that's sort of what we want to see from the weaker teams, right? Like, I know you don't want to see them defend them, but you want to see
Tomás Corrigan. You can't even watch these games back.
You want to see them competing and throwing up results like that, so teams like Monaghan don't just get a walk through. I'm not going to partake in this category because it's too negative. Like, you know, this is doomsday stuff here.
Well, this is a look back on it. Like, I mean, another nomination was Dublin against Donegal in the Super 8. So, like, I mean, this, the last 15 minutes of this game, while we all understand why Dublin played the way they did, just turned the game ended up a little bit farcical in that Donegal didn't want to come out and take the ball. Dublin didn't want to bring it into contact, and you're like, Donegal, you're bloody 8 points down, go get the ball and try and win the game. And they seem to be content just to lose by five, which they end up to beat. I think they're the only team the whole year that beat the handicap with Dublin, so
they claim a moral victory for
there
that.
It is, but, like, we always joke on the show that it's Dublin versus the handicap, and literally almost every game, can I say literally there? No, almost every game they actually beat the handicap.
I suppose if they were told beforehand that they would be beaten by 5 points, they nearly would have taken it. Donegal fans would have taken it,
especially
to beat the handicap.
Yeah, if it came to score difference, where they'd be thinking.
But it's one thing to be told beforehand, and it's another thing to actually see how it happens. I mean, it, as you said, it was an absolute farce. But again, I don't know how often we have to reiterate this, but when it's defensive teams set up like that against Dublin, or Dublin are ahead, it's incumbent on the other team to come out and get it. It's
exactly.
Not like, why would Dublin do anything different?
Exactly, exactly. So, like, you can get a bit like Jim McGuinness and start trying to shift the blame across onto Dublin when that's not the case at all. The blame should be firmly, if people want to apportion blame, it's not Dublin. Dublin are reacting to what they're seeing. The other lads, Galway versus Kerry, like, this game, I've never been so disappointed sitting in Croke Park with the expectations. Now, I know with the bad day, but Kildare and Monaghan before this game served up a good exciting game in considering the conditions. Then you've got the big one, Galway versus Kerry. Galway going so well, Kerry's such a new team with so many new young fellas, like, this is going to be great. I couldn't believe it, lads. Like, I mean, the crowd started emptying out in the first half for the Kildare Monaghan. They were like, oh, we're out of here. But a combination of the rain, you could hear a pin drop in Croke Park. And I think it was that Monday we got Tomás Corrigan in, and we were wondering about what the hell is wrong with Gaelic football, lads, that this has gone this bad. and we were reacting to what happened at the weekend. The day before was Tyrone destroying Roscommon and the Dublin Donegal. Then the day after went, the only game that was anyway like watchable over that whole Super 8's first weekend was Kildare-Monaghan. And like, I mean, then we get this goal with Kerry, and I put it up there in as one of the worst games I've ever had to watch. The first half especially.
It's always bad when you can hear what the players are shouting on the pitch
in
as well. Especially
game.
In Croke Park, in the Super 8's game. And the worst thing about it is, and like maybe it's an explanation why some of the fans left, is that this was the game that had to compete against the World Cup final, you know. And it was like, Galway right. Kerry, if there's one game that, you know, you can actually switch over from the World Cup final to watch, it'll be Galway Kerry. And then it turned out to be atrocious. Like, the atmosphere obviously didn't help, conditions didn't help. But as you said, such expectation, a coming Galway team and a coming Kerry team with a load of new players. And like, this was the, like, they had absolutely destroyed Cork in the Munster final. Like, geez, this Kerry team is something serious.
Yeah.
And then, like, the result wasn't in doubt from a long way out, you know. Like, so not only was the atmosphere terrible as it is, but we're just the last 20 minutes, half an hour, just waiting for it to end. And I know David Clifford got a goal at the end, but it had never been in doubt before that. But yeah, this was, I'd agree, this is one of the worst games I've seen in a long time.
Horrific stuff.
It was one of the games that put the writing on the wall for Fitzmaurice, right? Because sort of set up sort of defensively, and too much fear and respect for Galway.
He played a sweeper. Like, I mean, we've talked about this without getting too much into the tactics. This is always your damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you don't play a sweeper, you're full of, like against Monaghan, Conor McManus gets one bloody 9 or 10, you're an idiot. And they had Comer and Ian Burke. So, like, I mean, I refuse to say that him playing a sweeper was the wrong thing to do. And all he did was play Crowley there, who's a defender anyways. Yeah. It's not like he brought back James O'Donoghue to play that role. Like, that would have been a critique. But anyways, that's always the case, and especially in Kerry. The great Paddy O'Shea said something about them being animals, which might have rang true when they lose. There's a huge kind of, you know, backlash against the manager. But anyways, then the last nomination is Dublin versus anyone in Leinster. So Dublin, we know the Leinster Championship is a complete waste of time now. We know Dublin are too good for everybody else. But just as the draw happened this year, because Carlow beat Kildare and Laois beat Carlow then, so Kildare didn't get through to play Dublin, the only team that can really realistically give them a game. So Dublin beat Wicklow 4-25 to 1-11. Dublin beat Longford 2-25 to 12 points, and then Dublin beat Laois in the final 1-25 to 10 points. So they consistently scored 25 points in every game, and just the goal count went down a little bit. But like, man, they're turkey shoots. Like, who is any? You'll say what you want against Fermanagh and Monaghan, while you go on Twitter a lot during the first half, while they're, you know, they're testing each other out and no one will take the ball in contact, I do take the point that at least with defensive systems you'll be engaged in the last 15 minutes, as you know, you're not sure who's going to win. At what point are you ever engaged in any of those three results? Outside Laois, put in fairness, in Laois's defence, they
good
had a great first 20-25 minutes.
Yeah. Jim Gavin was engaged the whole way through.
Yes, he knew
what a challenge these teams posed for him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyways, listen, we'll give out the winner of this one. And for the reason I gave, it's Dublin versus anyone in Leinster. All right. Award number 4, and this is the supporters leaving before the final whistle performance of the year. So you don't really want to get this one. So it used to be awful performance, so just changed the name of it, basically. So first nomination is Cork. So this was a game I was at in Amore Park, and it just happened to follow one of the best games of the year with Roscommon and Armagh. And Cork were abysmal. Tyrone ended up winning 3-20 to 13 points. So, like, I mean, Cork, same thing happened to them in the Munster final before that, where their fans must be thinking, what the hell? Like, this is the third or fourth different manager now that just can't seem to get anything out of these crowd of fellas. So, like, I mean, that was awful. The other nomination is Roscommon. Just happened to get spanked by Tyrone as well. It's incredible what Tyrone can run up on teams. And I remember Kevin McStay said after this game, he's like, fair play to them. Their athleticism, their conditioning is way ahead of ours, and we couldn't live with it. You're just trying to keep the margin manageable, and all the runners are coming from the defence all the time, and we started getting tired and not tracking. Boom. You get tired and you stop tracking Tyrone, and their tails are up and they're just running from everywhere. And the fear, like, because Tyrone are naturally a cagey team in that they won't all bomb forward. They're more concerned about worrying about the defence. So if it's a cagey game, they won't all commit. But the minute they see you wilting, it's like, I'm going. And they all end up
going.
Everybody was going. And they end up just getting goals that are just crammed into the net because there's lads left over. Like, it's incredible. So twice Tyrone have demolished That was actually twice in a row or close enough to it. Third nomination for this is Fermanagh, who left Tomás Corrigan and who also left Sean Quigley on the bench as a whole load of runners kicked wide after wide in the first half and they got destroyed by Kildare. They were 1-13-5 down at half time, ended up conceding 3-20, and that's with two scorers who you might think, right, well, if we leave our two best scorers on the bench, we might keep the score down a bit. But Kildare were coming off the Mayo result and were flying it. So I don't know what your thoughts there are, lads. Have you anything to add to that? Have I missed anyone there?
But that's probably what a lot of people are missing with Tyrone. Like Fermanagh trying to copy that with a whole load of runners. Like Tyrone are naturally so many good footballers. Like you see it, like when they're playing weaker teams, like boys can turn it on. They might not be as good as Dublin or Kerry, but there's such quality in the team. And like Peter Hart's a runner. Niall Sutton's a runner, but they're amazing players. Like, so when they're running, they still have the quality to put scores over the bar. And against Roscommon, actually, I think all the scores were like on the 20 metre line. You know, there was no risky shot, nothing from far out, because it just ran past them and clipped it over. But it's harder for other teams to replicate.
It is. Not anyone can do it. Tyrone seem best suited about it. Very interesting about Tyrone is you see a lot of counties now and they're giving out about these new rules. I've seen nothing from Tyrone. Not
you
one player
would.
Or not Mickey Hart usually has his column and he'd be moaning it. Now maybe I've missed it, but I haven't seen one. And maybe Mickey Hart's at the point where, look, we've done this for 4 or 5 years. Actually, towards the end of this year against Monaghan, against Dublin, they were starting to be a little bit more orthodox. I'm wondering, is Mickey Hart kind of like, geez, yeah, let's just see how this works out. Now maybe I could be completely wrong.
I'd say it is, because it helps defences.
You doubt it, okay.
Just from the history of Mickey
Hart. If he's under the defence, really, that's what he's licking his lips now, I think.
No, it doesn't. You and Andy McAtee don't know what you're talking
anything.
About. You know what, I'd say you're delighted listening to Andy McAtee.
I was.
Him with one or two not really well thought out arguments, the same as your own.
That's a few people you've had on the show. You've asked them the question, they give you an answer you don't want to hear, and you're like, okay, move on.
Listen, Andy McEntee, I'm not sure Andy McEntee actually thought too much about these rules. Like, he hadn't even tried a 15 versus 15 in training. No, we talked about them a bit. And you know his coach, Colm Nally, has been on record as saying that teams are going to kick the ball to touch. So Andy has got one or two doomsday situations in his head. Nally thinks he can kick it a touch, which is the most obscene thing.
Are they going
to
practice that?
Listen, but like, this is a fact, because I saw this on Twitter and I remember somebody drew my attention to it on Twitter, tagged me in it and said, look at this, what's your thoughts on this? And I went, let me have a think about this. And I couldn't believe it when I actually saw that this Colm Nally, who's the Meath footballing coach, is coming out with the same stuff. So paint this picture. It's in the game's in the melting pot. You're in big trouble. You've got possession. They think that it's in your best interest to drive the ball out of touch, into touch, and defend the sideline ball because it has to go forward. So let me just break this down to you. You have possession, and we understand how important possession is now. It's God. They want to give possession away with a 50% chance of maybe winning the back. And when you drive the ball out, you have only got that amount of time to move up the field and match up on every single, because you're obviously got a lot of men back. You have to pair off on every single one of them.
Not
in
everyone.
The time. Well, you do, right?
The ones who are ahead of the ball.
Okay, the ones who are ahead of the ball. So you have to have that aggressive press on. Then when you get the aggressive press on, you have to ensure that the man you're on can't just sprint ahead of you and gather the ball into his chest and actually have the possession.
Yeah. I like it.
I knew you would like it.
I'm just envisaging the crowd applauding a good kick to touch if it gets right to the corner. Oh, well done.
A kick to touch. A ball boy will have that thrown to a lad straight away, and it'll be a men naturally at that stage of the game are always going to be all over the field. It's just the most dumbest thing I've ever heard. But so like when I saw a fella on Twitter saying it, I was like, okay, yeah, there's lads doing this all over the place. Imagine the Meath footballing coach thought of this. Anyways, I didn't say it to Andy there. I said I'd leave it off. Right, so the winners of this, I think Roscommon are winners of this, lads, because it happened against Dublin as well, where they got destroyed. They went to the Super 8, and in fairness, they were a huge letdown. They got well beaten at home by Donegal as well. So you could argue and say that their supporters left with 20 minutes to go in every single Super 8 game that they were in, which is a really disappointing thing after, you know, making to the promised land. So the winners of supporters leaving before the final whistle of the year, or performance of the year, is Roscommon. Alright, award number 6 is the so-called weaker county famous win of the year. Now, I have to say, I haven't put Fermanagh into this. Their win against Monaghan was obviously sensational. I don't class Fermanagh as a weaker county. They've been working in Division 2 for a long number of years. They've beaten a lot of big teams in the last 10-15 years. I don't know about you, but I don't see Fermanagh as a weaker county. And that's why, if you're going to, because there are going to be thousands of you now complaining, no one will complain.
What's the criteria? Division 4?
I think Division 4, but it have to be a weaker county, right? So all these three are like, there's going to be no debate whether these are weaker counties, right? So the three nominations for this are Carlow, their win against Kildare. So they won 2-14 to 1-10. Now this is against a good Kildare team who proved themselves. Now you can say Kildare sleptwalked into it, didn't show Carlow respect. That's all irrelevant. Carlow destroyed Kildare in a Leinster quarter final. They had no wides. It was their first win over Kildare since 1953. It was something like over 60 years. So like all criticisms I have about Carlow's system or anything like that is put aside. This was arguably, we'll see who wins it, but this was the result of the year. I didn't see this coming. I actually slightly fancied Loud against Carlow, but wasn't surprised Carlow beat Loud. But I just absolutely would have put my house on Kildare to win that game.
Yeah, but it wasn't a matter of a plucky underdog beating the giant killer, you know, like getting lucky with a last minute goal or anything like that.
No, they
comprehensively beat Kildare.
Well, they did get a last minute goal now, but yeah, they were 4 points up.
Like, yeah,
exactly. They did beat them
They had the game won anyway. And as you said, to shoot no wides was just absolutely incredible. But absolutely amazing.
Yeah, okay. Waterford beat Wexford 3-14 to 1-18. First ever championship meeting between Waterford and Wexford. And it was Waterford's only second ever win in the competition, in the qualifiers. Second ever against your neighbours, who you never get to play against, even though there would be a natural rivalry there with Waterford and Wexford, because neither would ever have come out of the provinces. So traditionally, outside of the qualifiers, they never play each other. That's the goal the game JJ Hutchins scored an absolute screamer in. We know Wexford are kind of on the slide a lot, but Tom McGlinchey, who's finished with Waterford now, that was a sensational win. We had him on the show as well and he was really good.
Yeah, like that's probably, I suppose, the definition of a weaker county. Like, I wouldn't, like, I thought it was harsh on Fermanagh, but when you look at Waterford, like they are a weak county. They've only won twice, and yeah, like I sort of look at Fermanagh historically, they've only won, they've never won of two counties, they never won a province.
Yeah.
But
traditionally,
as you say,
yeah. But like, I mean, these, okay, the other one is Leitrim, who beat Loud. These are all Division 4. Carlow obviously got out of it, but these are have been lifers in Division 4. Fermanagh are not that. You know, Fermanagh have beaten Armagh in the championship. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, and they've had some really good results in the Ulster Championship as well. So Leitrim won their third ever qualifier. They beat Loud 25 points to 112. 21 points came from play. Now, this is Leitrim we're talking about. So they obviously won by 10 points. Loud finished with 12 players. Loud obviously were beaten by Carlow as well. So they were beaten by two of the, you know, so-called weaker counties. They had a nightmare year. Pete McGrath's gone now, so there's a new manager in there. So, like, I mean, I remember this. We had Emlyn Mulligan on after this one. And, you know, Emlyn was absolutely brilliant. You could listen to Emlyn a lot. He's very realistic. I remember this result. Fantastic. I think they could have been actually down just before half time, and then one sending off, and then Leitrim just took
off. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, shout out to, like, as in, like, Connacht, man, Leitrim don't often get their moment in the spotlight, you know. And, like, this came after Leitrim were on the verge of getting beaten by New York in New York back in mid. Like, it really looked like going into the last minute that they were going to get beaten.
Oh, yeah.
So, the good thing about all that you're talking about, Emma Mulgan being in great form, the great thing about all this is that, like, the stories that come out of it, like, when you mentioned kind of Waterford earlier, great picture of them, you know, sipping a few beers on the pier in Waterford.
Oh, that was great,
And, yeah, just even going back, there was such a feel good factor around Carlow in the summer as well when they went. You know, you see Tarek O'Brien on the 6-1 News the next day and stuff like that. So they don't often get their moment in the spotlight. I think they would if they were in a second two-tier championship. But anyway,
which they don't want.
I know, yeah. But for now, it was great to see.
Yeah, obviously. And, like, I mean, we'll give winners are Carlow, because obviously two of them were qualifier wins. Carlow was championship against a team that really we thought would step up and ended up stepping up, beating Mayo and getting to the Super 8s and, you know, performing very well in the Super 8s. So that puts Carlow's achievement in shocking the whole country into context. 2-14 to 1-10 against Kildare in O'Connor Park. That was definitely the Carlow rising. It wouldn't get any higher. The rising didn't go any higher than that. So yeah, congratulations to Carlow, who have won so-called Weaker County Famous Win of the Year. Alright, so now if there's anyone from Croke Park listening in GA administration, you should probably tune out now, because there's one or two left in the last three which might not reflect too well on you guys. So we're starting with number 7, which is GA management PR fuck up of the year. So number 1 has to be Newbridge or nowhere. So we all know what happened here. So Mayo and Kildare drew each other in the qualifiers. Kildare were drawn out first. The rules state that the team drawn out first, unless you're one of the weaker counties in Division 3 or 4, you get home advantage. The game was fixed in Croke Park. Now, it's no surprise Mayo have a huge following. It's no surprise Mayo's huge following would pack into Croke Park. It's no surprise to me that this was motivated by money. Kildare's ground is horrific. I was in it for the Portlaoise Moorfield game and it is a throwback. But what is home advantage if you can't bring another team who's not used to playing in your horrific stadium? Now, the pitch is grand in Newbridge. Yeah. It's a little bit tight, but the pitch is fine. It's just the whole stadium is very, very old. But, like, I mean, that's what home advantage is all about. That's the FA Cup where Man United have to go to bloody Akron and Stanley and their fans stand on the terrace while the whole stadium is rocking for the home team. And that's where surprises come out of. So I think Alan Milton went on off the ball. Didn't come across brilliantly, I don't think, on off the ball. Fergal McGill really hit the home run when he said, now this is when Kildare is saying that there's a lot of noise coming out of Kildare saying, look, this game is going to be at home. So he says, we fully appreciate where Kildare are coming from. We don't take home venue off a team lightly. However, health and safety has to come first. It's that simple. The last thing we wanted to do is take this out of Newbridge. Lies. But we simply had no choice. There is no room for manoeuvre. There is no room for manoeuvre.
That's the most satisfying.
Not when it comes to health and safety. If Kildare don't show up in Croke Park on Saturday at 7 p.m, the game will be awarded to Mayo. Fergal McGill's tail firmly between his legs. They admit, in fairness, Kildare panel, squad, not county board, it might as well be said, but squad and management dug their heels in, fought the good fight, and had an absolutely brilliant players and management win against administrators.
Yeah, I spoke to Owen Doyle, the captain, recently, and he was talking about how they went to training on Tuesday and it was actually in Newbridge, and beforehand it's a 10-minute meeting and they put it all out on the table and said, lads, if we do this we could go out of the championship. But they said they were all in agreement that they were willing to risk that, and
yeah,
they would be happy to go to the championship, sort of fighting for what was right. And
they took a stand. Yeah. And this health and safety stuff is coming after the Kildare County Board, or I think the guards had said there's actually no health and safety.
Yeah,
we're going to make it all ticket, so you don't have to worry about the supposed health and safety. And very few ended up getting into the ground because of the health and safety, but it was only health and safety if it wasn't all ticket. Like, this is McGill.
Was there a suggestion that Mayo fans would turn up anyway and possibly present problems?
Well, that was one of the all-time greats. It was just not going to happen.
Yeah, the good thing about it, I think Keane O'Neill set the tone for a start. I think he was interviewed on the 6-1 News on the Monday, like, put across a really clear statement. Wasn't being arrogant or anything, but he was just saying, listen, we're going to play in the Newbridge and that's the end of it. And the good thing about it was, and I say this being from Mayo, was that the whole country, and I think most Mayo, sensible Mayo kind of fans, got behind him saying they're right to want to play in Newbridge, and like, we supported their right. And the momentum of a runaway freight train, like, you know, within a couple of days, and then the GAA just kept shooting themselves in the foot, and it just seemed like a matter of time before they would eventually turn and do the right thing. But they just should have done it sooner, because it just, like, ended up being a PR disaster for them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Liam Miller, lads, the Liam Miller testimony was another kind of PR absolute mess up from the GAA. So this was a decision taken by the GAA when it was because of Rule 42, which prohibits the playing of non-GAA games in GAA stadiums. So Liam Miller obviously played GAA growing up from Cork. Turner's Cross wasn't going to be big enough to hold the game, the tribute match. And I mean, whether this was dealt with well by everybody involved, I know the organisation that was running it, I was told, hadn't even contacted Croke Park about using Parkyqueave before they started talking about Parkyqueave. I think it was the Cork County Board who, it was a bit messy the way the whole thing done. The Cork County Board started off by saying, we would love to do it but we can't, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. But I don't think it went through due process, but it looked really bad on the GAA to be turning down, you know, the family of Liam Miller, getting as many people into that. Like, sometimes it's almost like computer says no, Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Instead of going, Jesus, yes, just, we know that. I know there's a rule there for that, but forget about it for now. Yeah.
That was the thing. They were talking about this rule, and it was like, it's your rule. Like, just break it. Like,
and you're the governing body.
Yeah, no, nobody cared. Like, there was no Cork Gael there saying, well, they better not play any soccer in Páirc Uí Chaoimh.
Yeah.
I don't think so. They were very, like, in the minority if there was.
No,
like,
and then they released a statement, right? So, obviously, this started snowballing, and the GAA was, you know, it wasn't coming out of it looking very well. So, instead of going, look, we're going to have a meeting to discuss this, they actually doubled down on it and said that they'd sought legal advice around funding, because it was suggested that the GAA receive government funding and they absolutely cannot make that call in a ground that was funded by the taxpayer or partly funded by the taxpayer. So the GAA released a statement saying GAA is prohibited in rule from hosting games other than those in control of the association in its stadium and grounds. The Cork County Committee and Central Council have no discretion in this matter. Only a change at annual Congress can alter this situation. Congress takes place in February each year. The GAA has sought legal advice around funding received towards the redevelopment of Páirc Uí Chaoimh and believes it is compliant with the terms and conditions laid down in September 2016. It's like, Jesus, lads, who decided to release that statement? Yeah. It's like, they just don't help each other sometimes. Anyway, so Liam Miller is nomination number two. Liam Miller, controversy. Two more, and they're Central Council related. So Central Council just recently turned a blind eye to Dublin having two Super 8 home games. So Fergal McGill, who's featuring again in this PRF fuck up of the year, he said that it needs to go to Congress, and we've talked about this very recently on the show, so I won't go much into it. Obviously the neutral venue needs to be discussed and decided at Congress, but like, I mean, Central Council can absolutely say, look, if you're playing your neutral game in Croke Park like everyone else, then you need to find an ulterior venue in the interest of fairness for everybody else. Find an alternative home venue, which absolutely could be a Moor Park an hour down the road, or it could be, well, they're definitely not going to be Newbridge anyways, but it could be O'Connor Park, which is only about an hour and a half from Dublin. Like, I mean, I think that's the issue. The issue with everybody here with this is that Dublin should not be playing two games. It's the de facto home venue for them now, with league games being played there, all their Leinster games bar one, then every other game. So, like, I mean, to give them two Super 8 games in a venue that they play the majority of their games in during the year, they actually play more games in Croke Park than Laois would in a Moor Park, because Laois wouldn't play all their championship games in a Moor Park, and, you know, they'd only play their league games there. So that's the issue. The issue, I think, can be fixed without having to go to Congress. According to Fergal McGill, then Central Council obviously rejecting a view of their own fixtures. So, like, I mean, that didn't look great on the association either, even though it has to be said, I do understand the reasoning for this, that at the end of the 3-year cycle for Pádraig Duffy's new structure, they're going to review it then, and the CPR invited to that, and the GPS. So I'm less, maybe I'll just take how dismissive they were of
the Roscommon suggestion. That was the messy
Can
part.
I add one more in there?
Go on.
The lack of football games on TV this year. Like, remember we talked about how the rights were sold before the Super 8 came in?
Yeah.
So there were so many more fixtures in football and hurling.
Yeah.
And then there was like no football for 3 weeks at one stage.
Stupid.
You know, during the championship.
No football, yeah. And then obviously the Sunday game, when we're leading with the hurling that had been played that day without leading with the football, which no one had seen. It wanted to be interesting to see now that John Horan is going to get this tier two thing. It's not John Horan's idea. Like, I mean, this is an idea that's been thrown out by so many other people. John Horan's pushing it over the line because they probably have that power to influence county boards and stuff. But like, this will probably get through. I want to be very interesting to see now if Tom Ryan comes out and says, well, we're very happy with where our TV schedule went 2 years ago. Now I know we have a tier two competition, but we don't really see why we might sell that to somebody else who might really appreciate it. And,
pretty
you know,
much what he said last time. What's to make him change
exactly,
his mind this time?
But now there's a whole new competition. They have to sell that to TV3 or let somebody else into the market. There's no other explanation for this. What do they do with this? Because there's going to be Tier 1 hurling and Tier 1 Gaelic football. Sky and RT are going to want this. Who's going to want the Tier 2? They have to sell them. There has to be. Yeah. This is not. Okay, there's a 5-year contract for exclusivity. This is not the deal that was sold. So we have new games now. So we have to let somebody else into the market, whether it be Airsport, TV3, whoever it is. And there has to be new players in the game.
I think it's a great idea, but does it not further cement the Tier 2's place in the pecking order below you know, below the actual tier one championship.
That'll happen. If
you, oh, well, like, I know, but it, no, it deserves but to be below.
I know,
it.
Like, but that's what they'll say. Like, you know, you know, you're just a, you know, look at it as if it was at the bottom of your shoe. You know, just further kind of increase their perception that they're just, you know, down the pecking order.
You'd be surprised though, because like, I mean, you sell them safe to TV3 and let them do a Sunday game on the Division Two games. Like, there could be the other Sunday game could be dominating hurling. That night. And then all the football fans would be like, geez, I wonder what happened in this, you know, because there'd be good teams in it as well. Like, I mean, Leash would be playing Armagh, we'll be playing Fermanagh. Like, I mean, there's attractive enough games in that. Like,
I agree, yeah.
So Tipperary would probably be in it, Tipperary in Division 2. Anyways, we can, who got relegated? Down are in it, aren't they? Yeah, Down are in it, yeah. So yeah, there are plenty of, Carlo are in it, or the Carlo Rising. There are plenty of attractive games. Anyways, so the award for GA management PR F up of the year, I've said that curse word too often and my mother hears that, she'll be losing her mind, is Newbridge or Nowhere. I don't think anyone have any disagreement with that. Newbridge or Nowhere, congratulations. So award number 8 is for individual performance of the year. So more positive one, lads, you know, just to mix it back up again. So we'll start with football, and I have the first one down here, a Shane Walsh in the Connacht final. So he scored 8 points, which was half of Galway's total of 16. This was a very cagey game. He scored 5 from frees, good ones, and he got 3 brilliant points from play. This was nip and tuck for a lot of the game. Galway obviously excellent in the second half. I think Shane Walsh really stood up this year and went from being a little bit kind of flattering to deceive to having a very consistent run of good performances. And this is a Connacht final when he was needed against the team that had beaten him the year before in a cagey game.
Yeah.
It's the kind of game you might have thought Shane Walsh often doesn't really produce in. And no disrespect to him, but he did produce. He was outstanding. He's the first nomination.
Yeah, he really ran that game and stood out in a game that wasn't, well, it wasn't pretty to watch because of the conditions, but like, because of the conditions, it didn't make it ideal conditions for Shane Walsh's game. But like, there was everything. He ran the game. He ran, like, he was centre forward. He ran a lot of ball because he had to, because there was a strong breeze that day as well. As you said, I think he scored 8 points, including 5 frees off the ground. If I'm not mistaken, they were both with his right and his left on the day. But as you said, like, I think in the years before this year, like, Shane Walsh would have had a reputation. I think flaky is too strong, but occasionally he would have just kind of dipped in and out of games. But I think this year was really the year where he kind of became that consistent forward that you knew he was going to be for years. And this was probably, although he was very good against Dublin and Kildare, I have to say, but this is probably his best game of the year.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Graham Brody versus Monaghan. Graham Brody, probably one of the stories of the summer. Like, he wasn't in the mix for an All-Star only because Began and Cluxton had brilliant years. But like, I mean, as regards the goalkeeper that maybe you might remember from the Championship, after Began, I would kind of have Graham Brody because of his forays up the field, which Portlaoise don't utilise, which I kind of disagree with, because of his absolutely cat-like saves. And we saw it again only in the Portlaoise match with that save from your man Mullen that didn't play in the final. That was a sensational save. Like, that's just a very, very, very top drawer. And he had 5 individual breathtaking saves in one game against Monaghan. Now, you know, so like, I mean, as good an individual performance as you see, for to come from a county like Leash and to get as much kind of airtime on the Sunday game is unusual from a Division 4 team.
There was one against Darren Hughes, and like, I'm a broken record saying this, but it was similar to that Mullen one where, again, he wants Darren Hughes to go into a certain place and he makes him go into that place and then he saves it. Like, it's unbelievable what he does. Like, he obviously came to a lot of people's attention against Dublin because he was running out to pitch and you know, helping with the play.
A few great saves line. Against Dublin as well,
And then this game then was just like, wow. Like, because you've always talked about him in training, how you can score past him.
Yeah.
And then you just saw it in all its glory against Monaghan.
That was it. You were just thinking, well, that's just you.
Yeah,
and
then you can score.
And I completely accepted that. I went, I need to think of a better argument to try and talk this
down. Ross Munnelly can score against
Right, so the third nomination is Conor McManus versus Kerry. Listen, this, and I think this is important to point out, very, very rarely in the last 7 or 8 years has Conor McManus played a game that there hasn't been a man planted right in front of him. This is a game against a Super 8, a top 3 team against Kerry, no sweeper, in Clonus. I'd say Conor McManus could not believe what is going on. And this fella scored, was it 1-9 or 1-10? I saw 2 different reports. I think it was 1-10 with 1-5 from play, or else 1-9 with 1-4 from play. But anyways, 1-4 from play, sensational, or 1-5, brilliant off the freeze. And it just gives you an indication of what this lad is capable of, given a bit of space.
Yeah. Yeah, as you said, like I think it was 110, 105 from play, something like that. But like Conor McManus is always amazing, or mostly amazing in Ulster Championship games, and he might have an amazing game and end up with 2 points from play.
Yeah,
just because he's had at least one, if not two men in front of him in a packed defence. And but against Kerry, like he got a goal in the second minute, and I'm pretty sure there was one defender inside the 45 with him. He couldn't believe his luck.
Yeah.
And then like I wondered, like, he's so good that I doubt it anyway, but like, you know how that momentum can kind of carry you through a game. If he didn't get that score in the first couple of minutes, would he have gone on to have the game that he had? And actually Eamon Fitzmaurice was trying to defend the decision to leave Mark Griffin on him lately. He said Mark Griffin had been flying in training, and actually he'd been marking Paul Geaney, and if you mark Paul Geaney, if you're doing well on Paul Geaney, you can do well on anyone. But he definitely underestimated Conor McManus' ability there.
And Conor McManus has had to evolve his game where he kicks balls from the sideline. Like the obvious one is against Tyrone in Omagh, which he won't kick them every day because it was so far out, but he kicks them regularly from that really impossible angle. And it's the only place he can actually get on a ball. Yeah. He has to run to the wings to gather ball. But against Kerry, he was able to get him in all sorts of dangerous positions. I'd say if you were to ask him, what game did you enjoy more playing in your whole career, he'd probably say, with the atmosphere, the home Super 8 against Kerry, no sweeper, I'd say he was just thinking, like, this is just what Gaelic football is all about.
And it's funny, like, if you watch him against Tyrone, he doesn't often even make many first runs.
He's actually, you'd almost say he's gone lazy. He's like almost, maybe not lazy, but he's got this patience thing down to a T.
Yeah, it's unbelievable patience. Like, but it's funny because you definitely crew Park as well. It was Frank Burns the first day, it was Tiernan McCann the second day, sitting in front of him, and Pádraig Hamsay just holding his shirt, and but he's not moving, like, and these boys are freaking out waiting for him.
See, but he probably knows that moving there is a waste of his time. I'm going to conserve my energy.
And he gets the ball in the loop anyway with a hand pass then, like, but he changes it up. But then when he got the chance against Kerry,
we'll leave it at that. There's no topping four. The fourth nomination is Paul Broderick versus Kildare. Now, he got 11 points, two of them from play and nine from frees, I'm pretty sure, but no wides, just a complete shootout from Broderick. So he got 11 out of 14 points with no wides, and, you know, was obviously instrumental in that absolutely famous win. So anything to say about that, lads, or will I move on to announce the winner?
He got his All-Star nomination as well, didn't
got he? His All-Star nomination, yeah, so he's done very well. Actually met him, I did a talk with him in a school in Laois at the start of this year. Comes across as a really sound, really good fella, and he wouldn't have been that well known at the start of this year, but now everybody knows who Paul Broderick is, and good for him, you know. I think the winner is Paul Broderick. Would be disappointed. I think the winner has to be Graham Brody for individual performance of the year. Just absolute cat-like saves. Kept his team in a game against Monaghan. Would have been blown out of the water only for him. Five different saves in the one game, and we're not talking about routine saves here. We're talking about one-on-one. So, like, I mean, for a goalkeeper to do that is absolutely outstanding. So congratulations to Graham Brody, who won Individual Performance of the Year. So Individual Performance of the Year for hurling. We've got Joe Canning versus Wexford, lads. So we got 12 points here, including two sidelines. So then Joe Canning against Clare, 12 points and two sidelines against Clare the first day as well. Aaron Galan, who got 6 from play versus Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final. Shane Dowling in that same game, where he completely turned the game back in Limerick's favour, got 1-4 off the bench, which was absolutely sensational. Conal Keeney, 4 from play against Kilkenny in Parnell Park. I have a load of nominations here, just let me know. Conal Keeney versus Kilkenny in Nolan Park, brilliant, brilliant performance, 4 from play. Cathal Mannion, 6 from play versus Kilkenny in the replay. And Cathal Mannion, like nobody else, when he turns it on, he's unmarkable. He's absolutely sensational, and he was that day in and around Johnny Glynn, who was brilliant that day too. John McGrath, 5 from play against Cork in Thurles. That was one of the most sensational games of the whole year. You have Peter Duggan, 14 points versus Galway. One or two of those points were absolutely, that was that point of the year, the one where he was,
I was
being
hoping you mentioned that in the goal of the year on it, rather than score of the year. That was just ridiculous. Never seen that.
That was a point though, right?
It was a point, yeah. But I was actually laughing when he scored it because it was that ridiculous.
Yeah, and the point he got against Tipperary, I thought was sensational. It was just after they got the goal.
I remember that bullet
from the sideline. Tom Morrissey got an absolutely sensational point against Kilkenny, the last point of the game as well, from the sideline. Kyle Hayes, All-Ireland final, 4 points from play, 19 years of age, went to the swimming pool the next morning for a recovery session. Like, I mean, this is just a new breed, lads. It's a new, the game's gone. The game is gone. TJ Reid versus Wexford. So that was in Nolan Park. Wexford were brilliant in the first half and TJ Reid led Kilkenny back into it. TJ Reid really almost got individual performance of the year right throughout the league final, and he was the real player of the league. I think the winner of this one, while it is difficult, and I'm not going to throw it to the two of you because you don't know what you're talking about, I think it is personally, this is the one I'm going for. I'm going for Shane Dowling, because you've got 1-4 coming off the bench, no face on him. The penalty was absolutely beyond belief, completely turned the game down without this substitution coming on. Whatever Alar Gillan did was brilliant right throughout the game, and he was playing brilliant and he was cleaning up. He still, Limerick would not have won without that spark and that 1-4 from Shane Dowling. To do for a sub, very rare you see a sub making that kind of impact. So yeah, so for individual performance of the year, coming off the bench even, we'll give this one to Shane Dowling. Award number 9, lads. So this is the Pádraic Duffy Award for New Structure Nightmare. So this is all laid at Pádraic Duffy's door. So it is his new structure. He went away and thought of himself. Yes, Central Council approved it. Grand, that's okay. But it's his idea. We could have told you 101 different problems with it before the year started. Without saying I told you so, we flagged these up. Go back to when I interviewed Pádraic Duffy and go back to when we discussed and analysed this. This is not going to work. So the first problem with this, so we've got 5 nominations from Pádraic Duffy's new structure for New Structure Nightmare. So the O'Byrne Cup being played in April. So there you go. So Meath played Westmeath after the league ended, was it, Conan?
Yeah.
After the league ended.
Cancelled twice because of the... Was it cancelled twice because of the weather, I think?
Yeah. It was cancelled twice. Now, the weather played a nightmare. Yeah. But listen, if I'm starting a new structure, I might think that...
Allow for all eventuality.
It is Ireland. Yeah. And it is January and February you're talking about. So there is a chance now that... Usually, this year it was snow. Last year it was... Any year is water. Yeah. Like, I mean, the pitch isn't going to be playable. Nomination number 2, last round of the league cancelled. So a lot of counties very disappointed about this in that it was Division 4 that got hit back worst with this, and it was like, this is our most important competition. Mm-hmm. Like, to say that you're just writing off our most important competitions to allow for an April free month that most counties aren't even abiding by, which, you know, is unbelievable. So they basically, they cancelled the last round of league games to be able to buy themselves time, because they had too intense a start to the year.
Yeah, like, I'm just looking through this list and it's like, it's funny, like, you don't even have, say, Dublin playing twice. This is part of the new structure as well, and you're playing twice at Croke Park.
Oh yeah, I put that in a different award, didn't I put that into,
and, like,
PR.
This is a subsection from the GA management PR fuck-ups.
Yeah.
I'm actually just like flabbergasted, I'm not even listening to him, just looking through, shaking my head going, this is unbelievable.
The third nomination is Kieran Malloy playing 2 huge games in one day. So this is unacceptable that you'd play an All-Ireland semi-final and head off after that and play a Sigerson final and come on at halftime. When it comes to player welfare, for the 2 of the top 4 competitions to overlap on the same day like that, how can anyone stand over that?
Yeah.
How can anyone? And we're going into next year, lads, without any change to that.
Yeah. And he said on the podcast that he's worried it'll happen again.
Yeah. Like, isn't that?
Liam Silk didn't even play, correct? Is that right? Liam Silk was on the same panel.
Yeah, he got injured.
He just played one. Yeah. But they both travelled up together. So the 4th one in this then are teams ignoring April for clubs. Like, I mean, this is a big issue. And we saw the stats, we talked about it on the podcast, how many actual counties ran their championship later this year than last year, allowing for the April for clubs.
Yeah.
Because anyone would have told you this. Anyone would have told you this. You're asking teams, and, like, this is another one, is the punishing leash for going away on a training weekend 2 weeks before the championship.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to actually get some good work in?
Yeah.
And you know what the weird thing, like, this all went through Congress, but, like, this was sold with the Super 8s, like, which was, you know, everyone wanted to see a bit of change to the championship, and this was going to be, you know, good crack to see how it worked out. But they added 12 more games and shortened the season.
Yeah.
And took out April.
Yeah.
It's nuts when you think about it.
As Brian Cody, and it's good that Brian Cody has got involved in this, he says the solution they're giving us to help the club pair is to add more inter-county games.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because in fairness, there are some counties, and Kilkenny are a great example of this, that in those 3-week gaps, See, there's no problem really. Only the issue here was that in a 3 week gap that used to be in the championship, every county would play club matches then. Then it got into the Jimmy McGuinness kind of thing where no, we're going all or nothing. So then you're screwed. Now Kilkenny never did that. They always played. So now their championship is running later than it was when they were actually playing games right throughout the summer. So club players are in a worse position in Kilkenny than they were before. The problem here is that there's a 14-day rule. A county board can enforce anytime they want. So any 3 week break in championship during the summer, you are entitled to play a club match 14 days before that championship. They won't enforce that rule. Now, I think now with the new structure, it's even more impossible to do that because there are very few 3 week breaks now because it's all been condensed. It's been condensed in. So now it's actually worse. It's worse. It's worse for club players, and especially that a lot of counties aren't even playing championship games in April. It's actually much worse off with this new structure. And then obviously the last one is hurling teams playing 3 weeks in a row. So this has been fixed for next year, thankfully. So this is like Wexford playing 3 weeks in a row, and they're playing, for example, Kilkenny, which have had a game on, a game off, a game on, a game off. They're rested. Yeah. So all the teams, most of them outside of, I think there's one or two in Leinster, have been losing their third game
yeah,
in a row.
Game, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's two.
Yeah.
It's very, very intense, especially in the Munster Championship. Anyway, to fix that, so instead of playing these off over 4 weeks, they've extended it, I think, to 5 weeks. So they're allowing
but
every team.
I think a lot of the management's only realised after they had done it, you know what I mean? When they were after their third game in a row, and they're like, geez, we didn't realise how much of a toll this would take.
Yeah.
Maybe it was flagged in advance, but it definitely wasn't as flagged as much as it was afterwards, after those teams had experienced it.
Yeah, definitely, because obviously it'll niggle the injuries and everything. Right, so the winner of this, I think there's no doubt who the winner of this is, and this is Kieran Malloy having to play two huge games, Sigerson final and an All-Ireland semi-final. Not on... It can't happen ever again, but I'm sure it will if this situation arises. Cara Finn are in it again.
Yeah.
Has Kieran Malloy left college?
Nope.
He's still in college?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Has Liam still... I'm trying to think of Guido and bloody Crokes. They're bound to have teams. Listen, I'd say the GAA are just praying this situation has arise, because this is just absolutely wrong. Yep. So the Pádraig Duffy Award for New Structure Nightmare goes to Kieran Malloy for having to play two huge games in a day. So award number 9. Are we on to 9 or 10?
10, I think.
Maybe it's on 10, but I think maybe...
Oh, no, it's 9. I
haven't counted these right. Yeah, my numbers are wrong. Yeah, but we won't worry about that. So this is award number 9. So this is the Woolley Parkinson Ego Award for dropping off the panel because you're not getting your game. I just want to say I've no problem with any of these nominees. These nominees, perfectly understandable.
Proud of them.
No, not proud of them. Concede or fault, but absolutely understandable. So number one, might be a bit unlucky to get in here because we don't have a full story on this, is Dear McConnelly. So Dear McConnelly dropped off the Dublin panel in April. No one's 100% sure why, but Dear McConnelly didn't play for Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final or the All-Ireland final, didn't start. I would say he wasn't happy about that. Definitely not getting on in the All-Ireland semi-final. Comes to the league this year and he's not getting a game either. He gets one game against Mayo and he drops off the panel. So look, Dear McConnelly could be unlucky for getting in, for being nominated into this. I don't know what you think.
I think he's very unlucky.
He's obviously going to say it.
I couldn't think of another. Like, I mean, he was the last one. The other two were bankers. Dear McConnelly's not going to win this. No. But I was trying to think of another. You don't hear about it as much anymore, dropping off the panel disgruntled because you're not getting your game.
Yeah, a lot of boys just drop off the panel to go to America, which is what he did as well, like, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what he did as well. Yeah, maybe they're dropping off to America, but that's often with players that are actually getting their game. So yeah, I couldn't think of a third nomination because the next two are the ones really that are the best ones for this. So James McGrath, so hurling referee, dropped off the refereeing panel, not happy. Didn't get the All-Ireland final that he thought he deserved. So he released a statement. Marty went down to interview him at a river, as usual.
It's always a river.
It's always a river in the background, lads. And you go to the historical landmark of the town, and he's standing in front of it, a flowing river behind him. Marty's asking the question.
I love the way he said, "Everyone in Westmeath is disappointed." They don't even care.
Like, I actually haven't seen such a backlash at this actually leading the news. Did it lead the news?
It led the news. It was on. Yeah, it wasn't just the sport, yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, I mean, since when is this news, right? So he didn't get the... So James McGrath said in a statement... Now, again, I don't have necessarily a problem with James McGrath. James McGrath is entitled to throw his toys out of the pram. James McGrath is not happy. My issue is that this isn't news. This is not news. Yeah. So anyways, James McGrath said, so he did, I think he did a Facebook post, and he says, it's a final and irreversible, obviously, decision, given the lack of trust, confidence and integrity by the CRAC, referees union or whatever I say, and I feel betrayed by the association as a consequence, given my 18 years unbroken volunteerism to the association on the National Referees Panel. So there you go. That was a very hard-hitting statement. Not happy, James McGrath. Didn't get the All-Ireland Final. Didn't get even onto the All-Ireland Final panel, and throws his toys out of pram. Any issues with him?
Yeah. well, the fact that it's news for a start, but like, yeah.
Yeah, have you any issues with James as such?
Well, kind of like he's.
It looks bad for a referee. I think is a new thing that referees actually have this kind of thing. You're a volunteer. I didn't realise referees had the egos to actually say, I'm not picked, I'm livid, I'm dropping off.
So he thinks he's paid his dues and it was time. Like, he's done two All-Ireland finals. I know they were two All-Ireland final replays, so he wouldn't have been selected for the final in the first place. But then, yeah, he had that lengthy statement, he had that news interview, and at the end of it, it's like, but I don't want to draw any attention away from James Owens. Yeah. And best of luck. You've just done that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? This is James.
Agree into the interview. Oh. Agree into the 6 o'clock news interview. It's like, Jesus, that just shows you where his head is at. Now, he didn't do either semi-final, so he obviously thought he was nailed on, because if you don't do the semi-finals and you're one of the top referees, then you think you're in. So we understand your disappointment, James, but none of us give a shit.
Well, all of Westmeath does, apparently.
So the last nomination for this is another Westmeath hurling referee. It's Alfie Devine. And Alfie Devine is 47, and this is kind of a different situation in that James McGrath is given 18 years unbroken volunteerism. James McGrath, or Alfie Devine, is on the other side of the scale. He's just up and coming, right? But doesn't see his career progressing at the rapid speed he'd hoped. This isn't a mercurial rise through the ranks. He's 47. He's from Castle Pollard. He joined the Leinster referees panel 5 years ago, only 5 years ago, and went on in that 5 years to take charge of the Leinster under 21 and Leinster minor hurling finals in 2016 and 2017, respectfully. So, like, I mean, he's done all right, as well as numerous Allianz Leagues fixtures. However, the game's dried up from this year when he also when he served as Westmeath minor manager, and now he's decided to walk away from inter-county refereeing. So he's Westmeath minor manager, so maybe he didn't get as many games. Is that because he's got a commitment at weekends around the same time as that? Do you know what I mean? So let's leave it to Alfie Devine. I was progressing really well, and then all of a sudden the whole thing stagnated and the games just stopped coming, he told HoganStan.com. He actually told, like, HoganStan got some original content. Holy shit, no one else wanted this story. So I wasn't happy with doing linesman or fourth official. I'd like to be involved in the game. This is all, I remember saying this in the podcast, this is almost like a copy and paste of my excuse for not for dropping off a hand. I wasn't happy just doing linesman or forward official. I'd like to be involved in the game. I gave it 100% commitment, but it's difficult to stay interest when you're not getting the games. It's disheartening, but what can you do? I just decided last week to call it a day. I've other commitments like family and work, where they have to be factors in my decision also. Alfie Devine, again, nobody cares, Alfie.
It's like a letter to Jim will fix it or something. You know, it's like, refereeing is Alfie's dream. If you can make it happen, please help.
But then the old stock, other commitments like family and work. Yeah. That's what players say. You don't care about your other commitments. Anyways, so I'm not sure. This is a toss-up, really, between the two Westmeath referees.
There was another referee story in Wicklow a couple of weeks ago. I think you were off, so we didn't get to chat about it. But referees showed up to referee the same game.
Ooh, like two stags bloody heads.
And apparently they had a bit of a back and forward on the pitch, and then, like, one of them just went off on a huff and one person refereed the game.
Really?
But yeah,
have an argument over, no, I'm not reffing the game, you're reffing the game.
I'm wondering, you've been involved in administration level with your club. How much do referees get for those games? Is it like 20 quid from each team? It's not much.
I know a mate of mine that they get it all at the end of the year. That's a Mayo anyway, and he just brings his umpires and linesmen.
Is that an inter-county referee?
I know, this club referee.
Club referee, yeah. Right. Okay.
It's, could be wrong. I think it's around 40, 50 quid.
Yeah. 40, 50 quid a team.
I thought it was 20, but maybe that's for challenge games, is it? When you just all throw in a quid each or something.
See, this is what I get for throwing a question during the middle there. You've been involved in administration. I thought you'd have this covered, Conan. Right, so who are we giving this to? Because I don't, like I just said three times, I don't care. It's not Dear McConnelly. He's in the clear because he might. We just needed a third nomination.
I think they'd all be angry if we gave it to none of them.
Do we give it? Do we give it to basically the Colm Cooper, who's put in 18 years, who's been there all his career, the big name, or do we give it to the David Clifford, the up and coming lad, whose career just didn't progress as
47-year-old up and comer Alfie Devine?
I mean, we don't have a video of Alfie Devine. We do have James McGrath. We've got an opportunity to go down and give Alfie the award by a river,
yeah,
and sort of get him out for an interview. And
yeah,
stuff.
But then again, Alfie might have been contacted by Marty. Might have said, Marty, this is this is not that big. So
I think Sam might have done that interview by the river already. I don't know.
I'm giving it to James McGrath for agreeing to meet Marty Morrissey. Okay, so the Woolly Parks and Ego Award for dropping off the panel because you're not getting your game goes to James McGrath. So congratulations, James. Final award, lads, is a special award for celebration of the year. And, like, I mean, this goes to Guido. We're not even going to mess around with this. So, like, I mean, Guido took it to absolute new levels after winning the Ulster Club. And we obviously don't see celebrations from inter-county teams because they keep it all hush-hush. Kevin Cassidy, basically, his career ended before social media became a thing. So we can only think back of what we could have expected from Kevin Cassidy after the All-Ireland final.
It would have ended very quickly with social media.
I'm not sure it would have gone down well with Jim McGuinness, even though Jim is a bit more relaxed about things like this. But a couple of different things for their celebration. Now, we have teams like, we mentioned Castlerahan. So Cian Mackey was supposed to come on the show and Cian went AWOL for like nearly 2 weeks. We had the manager on the show, didn't we, saying that he didn't get the players back until
he did talk about, I think it was the Irish News.
Oh, that was
like
it. Yeah. So they played in the Ulster Club and actually performed really well against Coolrane, wasn't it? And he said, well, I didn't get them back till last Thursday.
Yeah.
This was 2 weeks ago. So it was like these lads really dogged it out of it. So dogging it out of it is not unique to Guido. We just got to follow them dogging out of it, which we don't often have. So I'm sure Mullin and Hochta this week are having big celebrations, but nobody's documenting it. I'm not criticising the documentation of it. I thought it was great. It was a bit of crack and we were able to see how crazy they got. Because I'll have to be honest and hold my hands up here, lads. And I spoke with Alan Brogan on the phone about this. I've never seen anything like these fellas, right? So it's not like I wouldn't have won club titles. I've won stuff with Laois. Usually you go out that night and the next day, and Alan agreed with me on this, so it's not like this is just, maybe it's just Leinster just don't know how to party like these lads. So the next day,
Ballyragget,
in my experience, Ballyragget, but that was the Sunday night.
Yeah.
So the next day you go into the pub, and especially after club, because the town isn't really going mental, do you know what I mean? It's not, when we won the Leinster with Laois, a lot of the pubs would have been packed the next morning when you get down there, but with the club you're just really getting in yourselves. And a few lads might have a newspaper and you're just kind of getting back into the swing of things, and you might watch the video of the county final and it'll get a bit of crack later on that night, but you ease your way back into it on the Monday. So I ring these two fellas, Audra McNeilish and Niall Friel, the next morning, and when the door opens to this pub, this is coppers at 4 a.m. right? So I had never, like, I mean, these are landing into a nightclub when they land down, because I was on to McNeilish and he was at home. I says, I'm heading down to Mickey's now in the next 5 minutes, and the agreement was we talked a few of them in Mickey's, and then when they got down to Mickey's, it was like, I can't talk to these lads down here. Like, I was thinking it might be a situation like me where it's all kind of calm and they pass the phone around. But anyways, so I said to Niall Friel on the interview, I says, Niall, what'll you do today now? It's just a stupid, naive question for me. Will you watch the video now or anything? And he laughed at me. What are you talking? We're in Mickey's. We won't be watching any video. even to Niall Friel, the idea that they would even watch a video, it just made me seem like an awful nerd altogether. What a little baby this lad going to watch a video. He says, we're in Mickey's. So basically, that was it. Then we get a good few different videos doing the rounds. And then to top it all off, we had the traveller call out from Guido to Corrifin. So we had Neil McGee calling Corrifin bastards, absolutely bananas.
Yes, we bastards.
And we had Kevin Cassidy putting his jukes up to the camera.
So him, like, in a vest with the shoulders popping. That was a frightening video. Neil McGee was frothing at the mouth.
He was
sort of stitching the camera of his head.
That's not taken down or anything, is it? Like, I mean, they haven't even regretted that, have they?
I think so.
No, it was good crack. It was taken in the spirit it was meant. I wouldn't think it's going to be pinned up in the Corrifin or dressing room or anything like that. So that's it. Listen, you think you can celebrate, but nobody, in my experience, can celebrate like Guidor. And maybe Donegal in general, because we did have that road show or live show in Letterkenny, and we got the Batman and Tweety Bird and all those stories, which were classics as well. Donegal just do it different. That's all we have time for the Woolly Awards. We will be back next year, and we could be coming from a live venue next year. I really, like, I'm talking about this the last 3 years. It just has to happen. Yes?
Yeah, no, 100%. No?
Okay,
get on
okay.
it.
You're on it. Okay, so that's it. Listen, that's all we have time for. We will be back. Our schedule for Christmas, we're back on Monday with a show, and we'll be bringing you a best of on the 31st, and then we'll be one show per week until the start of the league. I think I said that last week anyway. So we'll be back on Monday and we'll talk to you then. Right, good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.